Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the real hip hop. Hip hop.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com.
All right, in this episode of the Child Support Hustle Show with author Kenya Rockman, we'll bring everyone up to speed about our latest activities and what we got planned as we're going forward. We'll also be discussing paternity fraud, due process violations, parental alienation, and a host of other issues that's in the news right now. First of all, we'd like to say Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. And y'all just have to watch yourself, because we know how this game goes. We know how the child support hustle goes. And this is the time where, you know, it's sort of like sick and arrogant, but they have these Father's Day raids on people like the one. Mm-hmm. Let me give you an example. There's a Ronnie Jones. He's a father of three in Miami. And he can tell you all about Father's Day raids. You know, he was picked up at a family barbecue about 5 years ago. It was like the cops came straight to his street with warrants looking for him. You know, he was handcuffed and taken to jail right in front of his kids, you know. And every now and then you have these people running these raids, and they pick these days to do it. It just shows you how sadistic it is. Okay, I'd like to welcome to the show the host, Kenya Rockman. Kenya, how's it going? Can you update us on some of the things that you've been in? I know you recently went to D.C. Could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for hosting the show, Marcus, as always. We went out to D.C. I was invited out there to speak. Excuse me. And we actually marched on Pennsylvania Avenue, which was quite something to see. The organizers, Leon, I can't think of his last name, had actually made arrangements so we have police escort So the street was completely shut down, and we marched all the way from where we started. I think it was at the Capitol. It ended up at the, I forget how the route went, but it was exciting. It was a lot of attention, and only the one thing that I could think of that stuck out was the number. We had thousands upon thousands of parents, non-parents, just people that support ending the child support hustle out there. It would make such an impact. So hopefully that'll be something that we can organize in the next year or so, just to put out a realistic timeline and get thousands and thousands of parents out there. There's no way they can ignore us. They didn't ignore us. They couldn't ignore us on that day, and it was maybe about 50-plus parents out there. So it was quite something to see.
They're not going to be able to ignore us. And so, just tell the people how they can contact us with the, you know, they got an issue with child support, question they need answering, or some advice, or need our services, or need to buy the book and get yourself, you know, upgraded to some of these things that's going on within the system. And it's a very corrupt system that corrupts people, like we're going to get to in the show about the corruption that goes on in Morgan County, Alabama. And everybody knows Alabama is one of the most corrupt states anyway. So you take that,
right,
and then you mix in the child support system that we already know is corrupt and is nothing but a money-making machine. I mean, take like Shelby County, Alabama, that, you know, in the case of Haley Bothy, you know, she was a mother whose 3-year-old baby was seized by DHR right there in Shelby County, Alabama. The baby was seized 3 days old without a court order, a warrant, or evidence of wrongdoing. And last I heard, she's still fighting to get her child back. That's what it is. And they're able to do it. You know, she wrote letters to legislatures and other people describing what she called a lifetime of attacks, which I can understand that because I went through that in my case. You know, I have an out-of-control DHR worker who's very vindictive in Morgan County. I mean, she's ruined many of lives, not just mine, but many of lives. And they flaunt the rules, you know, and torment non-custodial parents. You know, it's like they get a kick out of it. It's really sickening. And that's what needs to be. And that's why one of the reasons why, you know, I came on into the child support hustle in the first place. You know, it's a great platform, and we got people on here that's not afraid to speak truth to power all the way to Washington, D.C. and bring the light to some of these cases. But Morgan County, Alabama is one place they need to look at. It's some of the most inhumane and disgusting human beings that work at that place that you cannot even imagine. And we'll get into that. But tell the people how they can contact the Child Support Hustle here in Alabama. We're planning a march somewhere here in Alabama in a town hall. And so because we feel like people need to stand up because of some of the tactics DHR uses. And I want to talk about that right after Kenya tell us how people can contact us through social media points.
Sure. They can reach us on all of our social media platforms. That's the Child Support Hustle. We are on Facebook, YouTube. Please go and subscribe to our YouTube channel. We'll be bringing you live videos there as well. And we're on Instagram, KN or NK. And on Twitter, @CSHustle and the number one. And you can also send an email to contact@thechildsupporthustle.com. Yes. And you can go to thechildsupporthustle.com and fill out a new client form. I'm asking everybody to please text messages to our number, which is 614-344-1669. You can also contact us there. If you need help with your case, specifically with a specific issue, please complete a new client form, because communicating through text is too difficult. So if you could please just go in and complete the new client form, and that way you don't get lost in the messaging. So, yeah, just reach out to us. We'll, if we can help you, we will provide you with information, any kind of education. And I just want to emphasize again, I'll tell parents this, never put yourself on child support. Fathers, never put yourself on child support. Even if she is denying you contact with your child, even if you put yourself on child support, that is not going to give you any kind of custody arrangement. It's two separate issues. Putting yourself on child support is the same thing as putting yourself on imprisoning
right,
yourself for
right. Because from then on you're gonna be a financial slave for the state. As soon as they can get one foot in the door, they're going to make sure that family stays at each other's throat. They're going to pick winners and losers based upon how much Title IV defund and they get from either one. It's just one of the most corrupt systems in America. And Alabama is so corrupt. We have so many cases in Shelby County, you know, cases in Blount County, Alabama, that I'm talking about in Morgan County. And a lot of these people, they see this child support system as a way to bring in funding, and they actually seem like they enjoy destroying people's lives because they will have evidence of wrongdoing and totally ignore it. It's, I mean, where are you going to go with this? The caseworker's corrupt. She's getting bonuses and things coming in, like issuing warrants. They can get money for issuing a warrant on somebody. That's extra money. So they're always looking for the chance to do that. And you have the judges who also make money off the child support system. So when they do corruption, it's very, very, very hard to get that corruption fixed or overturned. And the only way you can do that is working with groups like the Child Support Hustle. Talk to your local media. There has to be more town halls like the Child Support Hustle, like we held over in Huntsville, Alabama, and made the local news media. We just need more conversation. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have in the system, especially with dads, since it's Father's Day tomorrow. You have a lot of the way the child support system works, you know, they try to brand and label people. Once people get these labels, deadbeat, you know, it kind of shames some of these non-custodial parents into a corner where they don't want to speak up because that's the first thing the parent who is being adversarial against you uses, because that's what the courts have legalized to designate you as a deadbeat parent. So no matter what you say about how, you know, the relationship with you and your child's going, visitation or whatever, whatever the non-custodial brings up, that's the first thing that usually comes out of the adversarial parent's mouth or the label from the courts. And so that leads many people to, no matter how they've been done wrong, they feel like they can't say nothing because that's the first thing they're going to use. And the public has been trained also to hear that, they forget everything else. Once they hear the word deadbeat, they don't even want to hear the other person's side. That's all it goes. And that's how it could get twisted, like in my case. And I'm going to take this little short break. Then right after this, I'm going to talk about my case, how paternity fraud has been ignored in Morgan County, Alabama. Okay, we back. We're talking with author of The Child Support Hustle, Kenya Rockman, and I'm about to discuss paternity fraud. And there's a case way upstate, and Kenya can tell you about that. We had him on the show. We had him on the show. It's Cornell Alexander. He went through a situation with paternity fraud. Kenya, could you tell us a little bit, just a little background for our listeners, what happened in his paternity fraud case? Because evidently, this happens more often than people realize.
Yeah. Excuse me. It's allergy season out here in Texas, so excuse me. Cornell Alexander was the father. He was in the media. They wanted him to pay over $65,000 in child support debt for a child that wasn't his. And the fraud went deeper because the process server on the original complaint lied and said that he had served Cornell the complaint, but Cornell was incarcerated at the time when he allegedly had served the complaint on him. So we had the fraud from the mother naming him as the father. We had the fraud by the court, by the process server, and then the fraud was perpetrated decades. It went on for decades of him being incarcerated over this illegal, invalid child support complaint. And he's still fighting to get refunded, reimbursed for all the years of harassment, everything that comes with child support enforcement. And again, that was not his child. Just because she named him, he had to endure all of the abuses that come with the unconstitutional child support system. And I want to urge, if you have a child support order and it's by default, I'm urging fathers to please go and get the service on the original complaint and make sure that they served you the original complaint. If they did not provide proper service to you, that child support complaint is probably invalid. So you want to go get that documentation ASAP.
That's right. And like I said, in my case, it was a similar type case that's still going on to this day, even though the child is in the 30s. But what happened to me was the mother had said another man was the father. She named the child after the man. She put the man's name on the child's birth certificate. And so many years later, when the child was about 8 or 9 years old, the guy, I don't know what happened, you know, when he got a DNA or got a test, the child was his. So I was brought into court. And she went through some other stuff. I think she had to, I'm pretty sure she had to reimburse him some money from this fraud, this paternity fraud. But I was brought into court, child found to be mine. They tried to get the whole 9 years. So there I was in Morgan County, Alabama, in court facing arrearage payments of $450 a month for 9 years for a child I did not know was mine, and the mother had committed paternity fraud. See, I'm paying.
Wow.
So my lawyer, they went back and forth. So eventually I didn't have to pay the whole nine. I had to pay, but I started out from that day that the results came back. My lawyer could only get it down to 5 years, which it should not have been done since fraud, paternity fraud had been committed and no one punished. Beyond, I guess, making some payments back or whatnot. But after five, so I started out 5 years at $450 a month with all the interest that incurs in that. So they immediately put me damn near $25 to $30, $30,000 in the hole already. And we know how child support works. You can make your payments every month, but every 30 days that total amount is not paid, is hit with a high percentage. In some cases, 10 to 15% every 30 days, the total amount has not been paid. It puts a lot of people in a financial hole that they can never really get out of unless, you know, some miracle happened and they get a whole lot of money. But this is what happened. This is what happened, and this is why the child support system is so corrupt and so messed up, because due to certain laws, there's no way that once arrearage has been incurred, it cannot be reduced or forgiven by a judge. Now, even though, and I, you know, I complained all the way to Washington, D.C., and they was like, it was nothing they can do. I mean, this is blatant, you know, paternity fraud. We know this, all the evidence is there, like the repayments back, the child being named after the person's wrong name being on the birth certificate, all this evidence out there. But I'm still responsible for paying back time for a child that I didn't know that was mine and the woman had put on someone else. That's just a flaw right there on its face, should be removed. But I say that to say this. They use that to keep putting that money on you. And all that money is not owed to her. It's owed to the state.
Right.
But, yeah, and a lot of these women don't recognize that. They don't understand it. So they're not looking at it like you're going to allow the state to ruin this person's life. What just so happened? Life happens. What if you get hit by a drunk driver, or, you know, people have heart attacks, all kind of things happen. What if that happens, mm-hmm. and you have destroyed this other person financially? Who's left for your child while you know, life happened to you? You're going to be dead and gone. Do you think the state is going to step up and say, I shouldn't be running this person in the ground? He's got that child to take care of, or she's got that child to take care of. That's not going to happen. They're going to hound the last one left for every dollar and dime that they can get out of him and or her, and then hopefully destroy that child enough in the process that they will repeat the same thing, you know, have a broken relationship and go and think that when it breaks down, boom, that's what you got to do. But mm-hmm. But when you do something like that, when a person does not know, there should not be any back time like that. And I know we went to Tennessee, we talked to Representative Parkinson, and he got a good bill that he got passed there. There need to be some limits on a person should be able to come back many years later and then, oops, oh, you're the father. Then the state, like, hey, you got to pay for something that you did not know. But see, the state's going to do that because they have so much to gain. And I tell people all the time, Social Security is not going broke. Social Security is being robbed by people like the DHR workers over there in Morgan County, Alabama. It's being robbed and milked for every penny that it's worth.
Yeah.
So tell us about go ahead.
I was going to say, up there in Alabama, they for their cost effectiveness for the child support program, for every dollar spent, they are collecting $4.30. So they're getting, you know, that back on the return on investment. And in 2017, they had estimated they received $3 million in incentive money in just 2017. And with the interest that they charge is one of the highest in the state, is 12%. And that's why their collections, $452 million, that's what the current collections due were reported at in 2017. But the arrears, they reported at $3.5 billion. And with that Bradley Amendment being passed, those arrears are not going anywhere. They don't care what your situation. They don't care if you're disabled. They don't care if you are an Army prisoner, a military prisoner of war. They do not care. They want that money. They will not dismiss the arrearages based on the Bradley Amendment. So we have to work to get that repealed.
That should be repealed, because I believe, like in my case, if I had an honest judge or if I had a trial by jury and I proved that the mother of the child claimed someone else was the father, named the child after the man, put the man's name on the birth certificate, I believe a jury of my peers would not hold me responsible for a child that I did not know was mine. They would not hold me financially responsible for a child that I did not know was mine, that the person had said was someone else's. So in essence, I'm paying for the paternity fraud. Paternity fraud should be a prosecutable offense.
It sure
because
should.
It damages so much. So that's what happened
and
in Morgan County.
And
then
who are you
repaying
the money to?
Right, right. So and
are
that's what happened in Morgan County, Alabama.
Well, Marcus, where's the money when you're saying that going back and charging you with arrears based on when the child was born? Who are you paying that money to? If the other man that she named as the father was taking care of the baby, your daughter, why are you paying any money back? Like who do you owe money to?
That's part of the corruption. That's part of the dark shadows that they operate mm-hmm. in, you know. And they got all types of ways where they make money and run people, you know, down through there as best as they can. But
right.
Like in my case, you know, I had been arrested for arrearage, and while incarcerated. You know, I had a severe heart attack, ended up with 3 stents and, you know, and some other stuff like that. So when I had my heart attack, they released me from jail. So I got the bill, you know, even though I was under their care in their custody, I got the $115,000 mm-hmm. bill.
Whoa.
And so that's how, you know, the jail kept themselves free of that money. But still, even though, you know, when I woke up from the surgery, they said I had been released from custody. But that release was just, it wasn't for my benefit. It was so they would not be responsible for that $115,000 hospital bill. But shouts out to the Huntsville Hospital Foundation. They paid it. The citizens and donors paid it. But Morgan County Jail is really the one that's responsible for that $115,000 bill, but they still haul me into court, which this is another reason why I would like that if we could get cameras into the family courtroom, because we would see how these caseworkers act. We would see how these judges act. These people know they have blanket power to destroy your mm-hmm. lives. And a lot of them, like over there in Morgan County DHR system, they are evil monsters. Some of them get off on this. They are addicted to that power over people's lives and how it could generate revenue and how it could build up their retirement. And you can just see
yeah.
the evilness in them. And that's why now I advocate, you know, friends, don't let friends go to family court alone. Take someone with you if you go to family court and just let them witness the inhumanity and the dehumanization carried out by social workers like the ones over there in Morgan County, Alabama, and these judges. Just look at it. So there I was.
Mm-hmm.
I went through the heart attack, got out. They hauled me right back into court 2 weeks later after my heart attack to show cause I should not be locked up. You know, brought me right back to court
yeah.
two weeks after the heart attack. Want me to show cause why I should not be locked right back up. So I'm like, I just had a heart attack, you know, and so I was in cardiac rehab. They wanted me to send them all the information about when I was in rehab, any change about my health. They wanted all my health records and all this kind of stuff. But they still wanted money. They still wanted me to pay. They cut the payments down, even though I had the heart attack, was in cardiac rehab. Nothing stopped. It never stops, I guess. But they cut the payments down.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
All this, you were incarcerated for the paternity fraud, with you going back when you went to court and they charged you with the arrears.
That was one of the cases.
When they arrested mm-hmm. you initially, did you have a hearing to determine your ability to pay, or were you offered any safeguards before they issued
No. No, I was not. No, I was not. They in here in Alabama, some places they'll put like a writ on your order. They'll be like, if you got to pay December the 1st, if you have not paid by January the 1st, there's an automatic warrant release. There's no hearing, no nothing. If that payment's 30 days late And that's how they do it in Morgan County. If it's 30 days late, the warrant is automatically issued.
That's illegal. That's one of the things I spoke about in D.C.
They're doing it so much in Morgan County, they're stumbling over themselves, and these DHR workers like Cook and Waters and others, they're foaming at the mouth for every Title IV penny that they could scrape out of a human being.
So, and then who do you complain to? Because we know that the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement are ignoring complaints when people file against their local agency when things like this happen, when rights are violated and these warrants are automatically issued without due process without due process rights. When you go and complain, which you're supposed to be able to complain to the Federal Child Support Agency, they are referring you back to the very agency that you're making the complaint against. So I always ask, and we always put up the hashtag, who has jurisdiction? Nobody wants to claim jurisdiction over this corrupt system, this unconstitutional system that would harass a man that had a heart attack while in custody for a child support debt that he wasn't even given a hearing to determine his ability to pay prior to the incarceration. That is just in itself.
Yeah, it was a blatant violation of my due process and legal abuse.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, these workers have the ability to just send in a paper to have someone arrested, and the judge just rubber stamp it. Now, the judges need to be held to more accountability, too. They should not take just any order from these caseworkers and, like, boom, arrest this person, you know, because, like I said, we have some very sick, vindictive individuals, like over in Morgan County, Alabama, DHR. They're very sick. It could easily be proved if they just allow cameras in the courtroom. I guarantee you, if they allow cameras in the courtroom, they'll either capture it on camera, or if you talk to parents and people to deal with it, you'll see a major change in the relationships among these parents. See, all this corruption and all this inhumanity and indecency and obsession with power and control issues a lot of these people harbor, a lot of that would be exposed if they would simply allow cameras or independent organizations to come to the courtroom, especially those side rooms. You know, because when you go to court, let me tell you what happened in Morgan County. There's another instance to show you the corruption and inhumanity at Morgan County, Alabama, DHR. So I got called to the side. You know, you go to court, they call you, then the judge give you a time, you know, to go talk to the caseworkers to see if some kind of deal could be made before you come before them. He's called to the side. You know, because after the heart attack, you know, I was going through cardiac rehab, and I was trying to, because I did the radio show before then, and I was doing radio shows, so, and I was having some shortness of breath, so I was trying to see, could I get back into this? So I did a couple of shows and was talking about child support and other things. I get in there, we're there for the child support. I get in the side room, the caseworker said, I seen your blog. I said, okay. She said, I heard your radio show. I said, okay. And she said, I think you're lying to the people. And I said, no, she said, I think you're misleading the people. And I said, look here, lady, I'm not misleading anybody. I live this. And then I took that time to remind her. I took that time to remind her about the paternity fraud. She threatened to have me locked up right then. There's been twice that I mentioned the paternity fraud in court. Once the caseworker was threatening to lock me up, and once the judge, you know, pointed his pen and pointed his finger at me that, to be quiet, he was going to lock me up. I just want to just talk about this. Everybody looking at me like, oh, you owe this money. You the evil person. You the deadbeat. But nobody wants to talk about the paternity fraud that was committed in the first place that caused this debt. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, forget all of that and just talk about
it. They never
now. Do. So she said that. And then she was just really, and I got to admit, the judge, even though he's in the position he's in, and he could do the right thing. He's part of the system, and he's profiting off of it too. But he was resisting them trying to lock me up, even though I was in cardiac rehab. The caseworker wanted me locked up anyway. And she called me outside to the side when the judge wanted us to, you know, work it out, So she called me to the other side of the place, right outside the courtroom, and she was like, I said, I'm in cardiac rehab. What do you want me to do? And she said, I don't care about your disability. That is the maddest I ever been in my life. And I told her, I think we need to go back inside. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that right there, that's another reason we need cameras. People don't need to be going away from the camera or a microphone. Everything needs to be recorded because you have some sick individuals out there, like the caseworker I'm dealing with, a very sick individual who gets off on saying things like that. But see, I'm so glad they know that I'm not afraid of no damn jail. I ain't scared to go to jail. Ain't nobody in there going to harm me. Nobody wants to be there, but you're not striking no fear in me talking about it. No fear at all. I'm going to be the same person in there that I am out on the street. That's just facts. But, I can't even come to court without people talking about my activism. You know, they listening to the show. You see what I'm saying? Like, I post up one of these Child Support Hustle shows on my LinkedIn, and then that whole week I got 20 or 30 people in the social work field looking at the post, you know. But that's all good, too. They can learn something. They listen to it because we're going to keep on doing it. So that's what my thing is. So that also allowed, that thing also allowed my child's mother, that allowed the custodial parent, that gave her some power too. Oh, this term, he's a deadbeat. He owes me this money. He owes me that. Even she has forgotten the paternity fraud. You see what I'm saying? Everybody's playing this game like nothing has ever happened and you, boom, you owe this. And, you know, and so I never had that brought out. But like you said, who do you complain to? Who has jurisdiction? Which takes me to this, and which is the path that I'm on, you know, and that is filing a complaint in federal court. We need to sue these judges, not the state. We need to sue these persons as individuals, these caseworkers and these other parents. See, I should not be owing any back time. I should, you know, like I said, they need to be sued in court about this paternity fraud and that period, and it needs to be an adjustment. But like you said, that Bradley Amendment, that's what would end up. Why would they put in something like that, that it cannot be forgiven, reduced, or removed retroactively for any reason by a judge?
Right.
Judges should have that ability, because if this evidence was put before a judge, I don't think any reasonable judge would be like, we're still going to charge him with all this.
Right. It doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense. It's just a hustle. It's just a scam. And then when they order somebody to back pay the arrears when they go back the lifetime of the child, that's what I was asking, is where's the money going? Because if it's going to the state to repay welfare benefits, that is, welfare benefits are not loans. They're grants. And so they don't need to be repaid. So, and then another issue with that is the custodial parent is the one that received the welfare benefits. Why aren't they repaying the benefits? So,
right.
That's a whole part of, another part of the child support hustle. It doesn't make sense. It's smoke. That's what I always say, it's smoke and mirrors. If you go,
that's all it is. That's all it is.
That's it. So, it's a,
I mean, and people, and everybody that's involved in the child support system, the child support hustle, the reform movement, we really need to focus on Alabama, because it's a known fact we're the most corrupt. That's in anything. In anything Alabama's doing, we're the most corrupt, one of the most corrupt states in the country. The last I seen, I think we was at number 3. Now, put yourself in this mind state. You know already politically and otherwise we're one of the most corrupt states in the union. You marry that shit along with this child support stuff, and you got a mess.
Oh, yeah.
You got a real mess. And you it's going to be very hard to find politicians of either side, Republican or Democrat, to do the right thing, because this child support hustle brings in big money for these districts. And they're all draining Social Security. They're the drain on the Social Security. It is paying these ad litems, these social workers, these judges, these enforcement agencies, these private contractors that's getting all this money to do the evil that they do They're getting it from Social Security.
Right. And nobody's saying anything.
Because
it
brings
going along
in...
with it. Oh, and Marcus,
right.
You can't forget about the money that they generate from illegally incarcerating and holding these parents. When they do these roundups, Father Day roundups, and go lock all these people up, how much money they get per inmate per day that they hold
right.
These parents. So it's a whole money. Money.
Here's another part to my case. When I was arrested for the arrearage and I was in there for 62 days, I added it up. I cost the taxpayer $18,000. That was cost to the taxpayers, the 18 grand.
Wow. So add that up too. So why would they run or make any kind of effort to fix this corruption? But we're exposing them every single day. So I'm telling everybody, keep fighting. Don't think that your efforts and fighting back are going unheard, not making an impact.
Yeah, and watch out for these DHR caseworkers like the ones over there in Morgan County, Alabama DHR, gaslighting you. Don't fall for it. Just try to educate yourself. Visit more sites like thechildsupporthustle.com and other groups and stuff, and learn how to fight back. And don't let them try to label you a term that benefits, that justifies their actions. Because once they try to label you a deadbeat or no good type person or unfit person, that gives them justification and cover. A lot of times they're not justified, but that gives them cover to come in and do you any type of way that they want to do you and get away with it. Nobody's going to look at how bad you've been treated because, oh, hey, he's a deadbeat guy. She's a deadbeat mom. She's an unfit mom. He's an unfit dad. Nobody's really going to listen to you once they attach that label to you. So it's all a conditioning process that DHR uses to keep these parents at each other's throat and ignorant to the fact that they made these kids in private and they should be taking care of them in private, because when you involve the state, you best believe they're going to make money, first of all. They don't care about your child's mental and social well-being of having two loving, fit parents in their lives. They don't care nothing about that, seeing parents getting along, having better outcomes for the child. And a lot of people get wrapped up in how too, male and female, because like here in the Child Support Hustle, we've seen there's been mothers who have been done just as bad as fathers have been done when it comes to the child support hustle that these states are doing, like Morgan County, they don't care. Only thing they want is that case number. Once you get that case number, and they don't care if you're male or female, if they can lock that case number in that they involved in your life, they're going to eat you alive.
That's right. And it's sad. And it's infuriating, too. So just when we have our town halls, when we come, because we're going to have them all across the country, we're going to get them back going, please come out and show your support. It's one thing to be online, excuse me, and voicing our, concerns and our outrage, but it's another thing entirely to come and show your support, make your voice heard in person.
That's right.
That's what they pay attention to.
Yeah, because when you show up, the media shows up, and the message gets out. The message will get out when you show up, because just supporting it online, that's good. But like Kenya was saying, we need bodies when we do these marches and these town halls to let people know, that this is an important issue. Every study that has ever been done in child psychology, it lets you know that 50-50 parenting, you have better outcomes at child's life. And I urge all parents out here, what are you going through so bad that you are willing, and what did that person do to you so bad that you are willing to destroy not that person, but that child's future, the social adjustment and all that? You're willing to do that. But when you have a child support system that's so adversarial and aggressive, like the one that I've been talking about over in Decatur, Alabama, in Morgan County, when you got systems like that and the people totally do not care how the outcome of that child is going to be, they're going to ignore paternity fraud. They're going to ignore parental alienation. You know, there's a lot of things, you know, I brought up parental alienation in my case, and I was threatened to be completely locked up. I told them, I would say, let's take a lie detector test. You know, I was willing to do anything they want to do, go under oath or whatever, to address this issue of parental alienation. And there was another time that this caseworker, you know, threatened to have me locked up. She didn't want to hear that. Like I said, once they get a case number locked in, they're going to foam at the mouth for the life of that case.
Yes.
Kenya, what are some of the things that some of the laws, I know the last law that I heard, the one that I heard of today was the one with the representative in Tennessee. Have there been any other laws passed that try to show some type of justice or reform in this system? And if there's not a law that has been passed, is there any panels or talks, you know, at the legislative level about how to make a fair family court system?
Well, out of Ohio, they called it a reform bill that did a couple of things. It's recycled to me. Like, I don't think that they did anything different or anything significant. I actually wrote an article about it, breaking the whole reform breaking it down. So if anybody wants to go and read that to find out what exactly they did in Ohio, they can go to the childsupporthustle.com and the article is there. There's been some movement in the shared parenting arena. I know Kentucky passed, I think they're the first state to pass a shared parenting bill that is fair to both parents. But as far as the child support system, no. Now, there are states that are doing things like reinstating licenses, driver's licenses, if they're suspended, but they are specific to say that child support might not be included. So,
and I'm just warning you out there, this is, I'm broadcasting from Alabama. Don't count on any of these reforms to reach you anytime soon. That's why we need to do more town halls in Alabama, and we need people to come out. We just had legislators last week who cut down unemployment down to 14 days, or what was it, 2 weeks? For 14 weeks or something like that. They drastically cut unemployment down. They cut it down more than half, way more than half. So we have that mind state of politicians down in Montgomery, Alabama. So you're not going to get no type of reform until you start standing up, speaking out. All these people, there's so many cases all over Alabama about this corruption in DHR. What we need is a statewide meeting and town hall and attention brought to this. We need people to speak up. Don't be afraid to speak up. Forget their labels. Let these people label you anything they want to label you. Speak up and talk about how the system has, how DHR workers and judges have used the laws to legally abuse you within the legal system, and talk and with others to see how you can fight back. My opinion is that you take them, sue them in federal court. The judge and the caseworkers and the custodial parent, if you feel like some of your rights have been violated, file the charges in federal court. You can't sue the state, but you can sue them individually. We need to get their crimes and their arrogance out in front of the public.
Definitely.
Kenya,
if you want to come on our radio show, please contact us, and you can come on and share your story. If you want to, what your situation is might help somebody else, and we want everyone to know that you're not alone in this fight.
Right.
So don't feel
right.
It used to be where you had to be embarrassed because you were labeled, you know, a quote-unquote deadbeat or anything like that. No, there's people out here that support you, and we're here. If you want to come on, let us know. You can contact myself or Marcus, and we'll get you scheduled.
Yeah, make sure you definitely check us out on Facebook. We're reaching, I suppose, thousands and thousands of people. We talk about everything. It's very interactive on the Facebook page. You know, people giving each other support, giving each other advice, and just seeking a brother and sisterhood about what's going on in this child support system. And we are making waves. Don't get us wrong on that. We are making waves, and people are starting to talk more and look at this more. And I want the churches to be involved. I know they don't get involved in politics, but they should speak out too, because a lot of times the people that lost money, there's one case I was reading about, guy owed $100,000, but he only made $10,000 a year. There's no way he was going to pay that. He was going to be a financial slave to the state for the rest of his life. There's no way he owed $100,000 and was only making $10,000 a year. And that $100,000 is being hit with that interest each month. There's no way he will ever get out of that.
They're banking on that. Literally.
Yeah, they want a human slave that they can get me out of. They can, as long as that person is alive. So even if they can't pay it, at least they put you in jail, like we were just talking about, and you can get some money that way. They can suspend your license. Maybe you'll get caught up and you'll still pay them some type of way into their department. You know, you get caught driving with a suspended license because of child support, then the county or city is going to get some of that, you know. So, and if you get arrested, if you ain't got the money, they can throw you in jail, and they're going to get the money for that, for you being there. They can charge it to the taxpayer. It's just one of the most corrupt systems in the world. And debtors' prisons, we all know, has been outlawed, but the child support system is about the only place that's just openly doing it right in front of our faces.
That's right. And
okay.
I talked about that in D.C., so if anybody wants to go and hear the speech that I did when I just went to D.C., I spoke about debtor prisons, then go to our YouTube channel, and the video was on there. The Child Support Hustle, we're on YouTube, so you can go there and watch that. And I'm full of useful information, and we will reabolish debtor prisons for sure.
Right. And with that, Kenya, it was a pleasure having you on. I'm going to end the show with, I'm going to play Carol Rhodes. And she was a child support worker. And she worked within the system. And the agency she worked in, they brought in lots of money. Forfeiture, you know, they thought of new and creative ways to go after non-custodial parents and obligors, people that owe them money. But she was on the inside, and she talks about how she saw how corrupt it was. So she quit, and she actually wrote a book called Friend of the Family, Enemy of the Court. And we'll be back next week or the week after that with another Child Support Hustle show. But keep up with us on all the social media, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook, especially Facebook, very interactive and a quick way to get in touch with us. Or you can just visit us at www.thechildsupporthustle.com. Anything else you want to say, Kenya, before we hit this Carol Rhodes, a former social worker, an insider?
Just want to thank everybody for their continued support. Keep fighting, and remember, they can ignore one, they can ignore hundreds, but they cannot ignore thousands. Let's go.
We got to do it. And here's Carol Rhodes, a former social worker, telling you in her own words how the system works.
To the children and families. It's a pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, to introduce to you Ms. Carol Rhodes.
Thank you. My purpose today is not to dazzle you with my oratorical brilliance and skills. I merely want to say that I came to the 37th Circuit Family Court to make a difference. I was well qualified and hoped to be able to help Michigan families of divorce and separation, but early on I realized that the system was not designed to be child-friendly. No friendship nor honest conciliation were ever allowed in the family justice system between caseworkers and clients. It was all about money. How to get the federal and state tax dollars that were allotted each case for enforcement. In fact, our director would say regularly, we aren't the friend of the family, we're the friend of the court. We stumbled over ourselves trying to get more Title IV-D cases on our records and to increase the child support orders because the federal government granted huge allotments for each case we enforced. In the years I worked in the system, I witnessed regular deception to clients that was mandated by office policy. I saw gender bias and discrimination. I saw records destroyed. I saw office policies and rules change from week to week for the profit of the agency. I saw hundreds of pleas for parenting time or enforcement get buried because there is no money in enforcing custody or visitation issues. Increasing the child support money that came into our offices was the goal for each of us. We were rated according to how much money we brought in through asset seizures, income garnishment, court hearings, warrant issue. We wrote the orders and then we enforced them. The judge merely rubber stamped our efforts. My director proudly told me that the Child Support Enforcement Agency was the darling of the circuit court and that we actually made money for the judge and the court. Unlike the sheriff's department and so many other, our county or state was not an exception to the rule. We were one of the most successful counties, and we shared training with other counties and states so they could learn how to maximize their efforts toward increased collection. We were not only told to withhold information, forms, policies, laws, and statutes from our clients with questions, but we were forbidden to help them obtain legal relief from unfair situations beyond their control. We were instructed to quickly help those who were demanding increases in child support, but we were threatened with losing our jobs if we should breathe a word to encourage an injured or unemployed payer to petition for a reduction of any kind. For the years that I worked in the system, I put my job on the line whenever I helped any of the parties in trouble. We were not to get personally involved. The children or parents, we had nothing to do with that. I was derisively accused of wasting my time being a social worker. We worked closely with Child Protective Services and Family Independence Agencies, and they were the same way. No one wanted to improve services or hear about abuses within the system because every worker in these huge bureaucracies was trying to keep his or her job by covering up any errors or problems. I had six secretaries underneath me, unlimited power in my 401k and my office to lose if I should rock the boat. But rock the boat I did when I wrote the book Friend of the Court, Enemy of the Family. Families that were bleeding from the pain of divorce and separation were insulted, tricked, lied to, and deceived by persons without adequate training to be making those kind of judgment calls. Most of the custody determinations were made by unwed, childless individuals who were totally unqualified to hold the lives of so many in their hands. The determinations were made on the basis of the most child support that could be ordered for each case.
Yeah.
Fathers or non-custodial parents were stereotyped as payers only. The court and most caseworkers felt that fathers were unnecessary and possibly dangerous for the children to have contact with. The child support system is an adversarial system. It encourages parental alienation and court battles. Children are pawns in an expensive and elaborate game of winner versus loser. Attorneys coming into the picture further divide the already fractured family and insulate the parents from communicating with each other. Usually after attorneys and agencies become involved, new and creative charges of abuse, neglect, and addiction enter the picture. Many times these are convenient charges against innocent family members guilty of parents even after the partner left. I heard many unwed fathers tell me that they begged the mothers of their children to marry them, but that the mothers were unwilling to give up the welfare check in exchange for a husband and father in the home. The most outdated picture of the father leaving the mom and kids to run off with his secretary is all but a thing of the past. In Southwest Michigan, 98% of the divorces are initiated by mothers and unwanted by the father. These aren't abusive fathers either. Equal parenting is not a men's issue. I was a single mother for most of my children's lives, and I know what children need most is the love and balance two fit parents can give them. Money can never make up for the loss of a parent. Divorce or separation should not be the reason some kids will never get to know one important part of themselves. Equal parenting does not do away with child support. Child support takes on a whole new dimension for children with two loving parents instead of just one. I am humble as I stand in the shadows of one of our greatest founding fathers. Here in this place, another great father, Martin Luther King, announced to the world that he had a dream. Well, Mahatma Gandhi told us that we must be the change that we want to see in the world. Are you willing to be that kind of change? Yeah. Thomas Jefferson said that we only have the rights we're willing to fight for. Our Constitution gives all the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But for some children, the right to have two loving and involved parents in their lives has been usurped by the courts. Courts rule according to precedent, and the precedent has been biased against one parent in the past, branding him or her the non-custodial parent, which in itself is an insult. Equal parenting by two fit and willing parents is what our courts and agencies must go back to believing in. Laws and fiscal policies must not facilitate conflict and adversarial relationships between parents. It's only a matter of time before the civil rights of families will be restored in the courtrooms of our nation. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Sorge, and I'd like to tell you about a breakthrough study coming out of the University of California that reveals some shocking facts related to our child support system. We all know that divorce is contentious, but why the long, drawn-out battles over custody? These battles pit one parent against the other and put the children in the middle. In most cases, both parents want to see their children, and except under rare circumstances, do the children not want to see both parents. So why don't the parents simply share the children? Well, you guessed it, money. If child support levels are set too low, the children may not get proper housing or food or clothing. But if child support levels are set too high, the payer may not be able to afford the payments. And under our current system, if a payer falls behind on payments, a warrant may be issued for their arrest. And if they're arrested, their driver's licenses are taken away and they're put in jail, where they can't work and make money to catch up on their payments. So it's a vicious cycle and nobody wins. We believe that this University of California study reveals for the first time the true costs of raising children and uncovers damning evidence that our current child support calculations unnecessarily fuel custody battles. So we sat down with a brilliant economist, Dr. William Komenort, the main author of this study. He's professor of economics at the University of California and once served as the chief economist of the Federal Trade Commission in Washington, D.C. Thanks for giving us the opportunity.
I'm delighted.
So if it costs $500 a month to raise a child in the state of Alabama, does every parent pay $500 a month?
No, the state can set different amounts for wealthier parents than poorer parents, can set different amounts if there's two children or three children as opposed to one child in the household. So the states have lots of flexibility. But however they do it, they must pay attention available data on the economic cost of raising children.
Can an economist determine what it costs to raise a child?
Yes. Suppose you have two households with pretty much the same income levels and the same general standards of living. And one of these households might have one child, and another household might be childless. And then one can compare the household with a child with the household without the child and try to examine with available data, did the household with the child spend more on housing, more on food, more on clothing, more on child care and education, more on other different elements of expenditures. Suppose it's true that a household is composed of a husband and a wife and no children, and they live in a two-bedroom apartment, and they use the second bedroom as a den. Now suppose a child arrives, and the den is transformed into a nursery. Let's compare the two circumstances. Well, given my hypothetical example, notice there is no change in housing costs. They spent the same amount on rent with the child arrives as they spent originally. They stay in the same unit. For the most part, your child lives in your household and, you know, consumes the same collection of goods that you consume.
Do people that have their first child spend more on food?
Generally, no. They spend the same amount on food, despite the presence of the first child, than they spent earlier.
If you have another mouth eating, how could you possibly not spend more on food?
You probably throw away less. Suppose it was true before the presence of children, you would eat out a lot. And we all know that food in restaurants is expensive. And when the child arrives, you eat at home more. So there may be some redistribution within the categories. I don't doubt that. But your total outlays, you know, don't appear to be that much different in the presence of a child than before.
Dr. Kommener's approach measures what is typically called marginal cost increases. For example, an automobile does not burn much more gasoline with two people sitting in it than it does with just one person sitting in it. The cost of the extra fuel consumed would be called the marginal cost of adding a second passenger. If we dig into the details of Dr. Kommener's publication, we find that the increase in food expense is, in fact, very low when children are young. But as the children age, food costs go up significantly. This might lead one to believe that child support amounts should be increased as the children age. However, Dr. Kommener's data also reveal a counterbalancing trend. Parents spend less on child care services as the children age. While these two factors do not offset each other exactly, and the results vary somewhat in different economic brackets, total marginal expenses do not change substantially as children get older. How many households did you study?
We looked at over 16,000 households to do these comparisons.
Your control group had no children?
That's correct.
And then the group that you were measuring the increase in expenditures had one, two, three, or more children?
We did it in three different circumstances, with one child, with two children, and with three children.
I asked Dr. Kommener if others had published on this topic before he and his co-authors did. He said yes. There are two other published methods, but neither looks at out-of-pocket marginal costs.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture annually publishes a report on the cost of raising children. And what's striking is that they use the same data that I use. We all use the same data.
But he said that the USDA method is flawed because it simply takes certain expenditure categories and divides those costs by the number of individuals in the family, including the children. This is called the average costs method as opposed to the out-of-pocket marginal costs method. I asked him to give us an example of why his method comes up with a more realistic measure of transportation costs than the USDA method.
The household had two cars before the arrival of children, and now has two cars still. And for the most part, they spend the same amount of money on cars and gasoline and all of that stuff. And the cars had a back seat before, which wasn't generally used. And now it's used with the child. So there's essentially no additional transportation costs. The real transportation cost is the cost of the car seat.
He went on to explain that the USDA method is also flawed with respect to housing costs.
They said that the housing cost of the child is the cost of an additional bedroom. So if originally you had a two-bedroom apartment, one used for the den, then the housing cost would be the hypothetical rental cost of a three-bedroom apartment where you could keep your den even if that was never used. So again, that was a fiction.
We then talked about a second competing method for studying the costs of raising children called the income equivalence or IE method. The IE method is used by a private consulting firm that advises many of the states regarding child support levels.
They measure the welfare of a household in terms of the proportion spent on alternatively food or adult clothing. And then it tries to ask whether or not in the presence of the child, you spent less on adult clothing or food than you did otherwise.
Sound complicated? Well, that's because it is. Let us try to explain the convoluted approach taken by the IE method.
The IE method assumes that fewer dollars are spent on adult food and adult clothing, so that money could be made available for the needs of the children. The method then assumes that a similar shifting of expenses will occur in other cost categories as well, such as for transportation and housing costs. But the IE method does not measure those shifting expenses directly. Instead, it makes the questionable assumption that parents will give up the same proportion or percentage of their income in other expense categories as they did for adult food and clothing. So it multiplies that same percentage times the family's other expenses to compute a synthetic amount. It then assumes that a custodial parent would need this synthetic amount in order to raise children under a lifestyle that also affords that custodial parent all the things they enjoyed prior to having children.
They're trying to assign a value to keeping the old lifestyle, even though you're living with a child and you don't follow the old lifestyle.
You may not even want the old
and you
lifestyle.
May not even want, that's exactly right. You may not even want the old lifestyle, but that's not taken into account in these other methods. It's a bizarre approach, I believe.
I asked Dr. Komenor for some examples of what types of hypothetical reductions in the standard of living might be computed in the IE method's synthetic amount.
Food costs are largely often restaurant meals out, and some people want to have very high fashion clothing and some do not. We all know that once you have a child, your whole life changes and you have focus on your children in a way that you never did before. But the methodology used in this IE method ignores that reality.
Does the IE method measure the value to parents of having a child?
No, it doesn't.
I've read that some of these IE methods actually measure the amount of tobacco and alcohol consumed by the adults.
Yes, they do. Isn't that bizarre? And yet, that approach is the dominant approach today, used today, by which child support guideline amounts are determined.
Why?
The reason is because when the states got into this business back in the 1980s, there was no data on the child expenditures, there were data on household expenditures. And so they needed to find a way to go from available data for the household to that which it applies to the child.
Did the IE method look at single parents with children?
No, they did not. They only looked at married households.
What about the USDA method? Did they look at single parents?
Yes, they did. They did look at single parents as well as married parents.
And did you look at single parents?
Yes, I did.
Because one could argue that the single parent with a child is the more relevant economic situation than the married or the couple with or without children.
That's exactly right. The costs of raising a child or children in a single-headed household are slightly greater on average than those in a married household.
You're basically saying that people spend less on children than these other methods estimate they spend on children.
Yes, substantially less. And the reason is because our method is limited to out-of-pocket expenditures. You know, direct
real money.
Real money. What the other methods do is attribute expenditures to children which are not made out-of-pocket. It's a fiction.
Well, let's take a look at the costs estimated by the IE and USDA methods and compare them to the costs measured by Dr. Komenor's method. For married households, the IE method overestimated the cost of raising a child by about 200%, and the USDA method overestimated the cost by roughly 300%. The overestimates were even more extreme for single-parent households. While the IE method did not even look at single-parent households, the USDA method overestimated expenses by over 300% for low-income households and over 400% for mid- to high-income households. These overestimates have been misleading the states into setting child support awards that are too high, by somewhere between $400 and $800 per month per child. Over the course of a child's dependency, that could amount to nearly $100,000 per child of unsupported costs for low-income families and nearly $200,000 per child of unsupported costs for middle-income families.
This begs the question of whether the $120 billion of unpaid child support in the United States today is due to parents' unwillingness to make child support payments, or are the amounts so high that they cannot afford to make them? Essentially, there is a profit in being a custodial parent.
That's exactly right. That's what the current child support system does.
Do you think that this profit factor that exists in the guidelines now can cause non-optimal behavior?
For the child support system to work effectively, it must have the agreement of both parents, not only the recipient, but the payer. And the payers recognize that the amount of money that they are obligated to pay exceeds the actual expenditures on the child. They know that. They're not saying they live it. And so what the payers are funding is not merely the cost of raising their children, but also a financial asset which benefits the recipient. And of course, that creates discord between the parents. The payer objects, and the recipient feels entitled to it, which would not be true if the child support award amounts truly reflected the out-of-pocket costs of raising children.
And is there a venue where this discord gets played out?
In the courts. In divorce courts.
This is one of the most contentious areas of family law, and the unfortunate truth is that children are paying the price for a flawed system. If you would like to see your state review its child support guidelines, please contact your state legislators and let them know that children should not be used as pawns in an economic battle involving their parents and their lawyers. I hope that with your help, we can work toward reducing the conflicts inherent in our family court system. I'm Joe Sorge. Thank you for watching.
Put you on child support. Oh, oh, oh. electricity, and they ain't providing your needs. Seems never agree. Don't take a ride, cause I am deceived. So